the Natural Resources Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Monday, April 18th, 2005, and we're here to continue the public hearing on Senate Bill 5518, which is the budget bill for the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Open the public hearing on Senate Bill 5518. And it should be noted, committee members, that you have some material at your places that was submitted to the by the director in response for information requests from the committee. So with that, Ms. Sebastian, do you have anything to add?
I do not at this time.
I will call forward Art Schlack and Linda Ludwig from Associated Oregon Counties and League of Oregon Cities, respectively.
Madam Chair, I'm just curious, where are the Senate members today? Are they not joining us?
If they do, they've lost a lot of weight.
Reminds me of Harvey, Pink Elephants.
Remember that movie with Jimmy Stewart?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Linda Ludwig from League of Oregon Cities. First of all, I'm giving you a handout responding to a question from Representative Schaffler at an earlier meeting about the small cities grants of $1,000 that you have seen, I think, in your materials from DLCD. Representative Schaffler asked me how these small grants were spent, and we sent out an email to find out through the league on our own. And you'll see the majority of them are spent as contracted services, contracted planners, the majority of times either to update a zoning code or their comprehensive plan. So I think for the most part, although this is a small sampling of the many grants that are given that way, I think this is what we've heard consistently about the expenditures of those grants. Mr. Schlack, to my right, and I both sit on the General Fund Grants Committee and do look at these grants as they go out, as well as the larger General Fund's grants. What I'd like to just say today, very much appreciate the committee's prioritization of the grants going out to local governments. They continue to be very, very much needed. And we are, the league, very generally very supportive of the department's budget. We very much appreciated working with the new director, Lane Shetterly, and all of his efforts that he's been making out in the field with cities. I would like to bring to the committee's attention, as you heard from Mr. Shetterly, the need within the department in terms of staff and resources and that ongoing need as we move forward into a post-Measure 37 environment. Local governments are also very much in that same place with resources and staffing needs. And although I'm not asking the committee for additional grant funding, I want the committee to be very well aware that local governments are stretched in our ability to cope with new regulations, new rulemakings through the department, and those have not slowed down since the inception of Measure 37. So although many of those rulemakings are happening in order to facilitate more flexibility, they do, in fact, require local governments to provide more resources in reviewing the rulemaking and making sure they're in compliance with them and updating their comprehensive plans. So we are, as well, stretched by new departmental requirements in addition to Measure 37 needs.
I think that the committee would appreciate input around the types of rule changes that are going on, because I think there probably are some of them that local governments would be glad to put time into if it resulted in a time savings or a staff savings down the road further. Can you give us any specific examples around things that you see as problems and things that you see as beneficial?
In the existing, the current rulemakings that we're going through? We are currently in draft 5 of Goal 9, Industrial Commercial Development Rulemaking. This rulemaking has gone through many iterations. It's been problematic for local jurisdictions to follow and really understand what that's going to be, what that translates to on the ground in terms of the additional planning effort, more in-depth economic opportunity analysis, how that planning exercise and the expenditure of additional planning dollars is really going to facilitate more economic growth in their communities. That's one that there's been a lot of questions about, I think, that we could talk about. The Goal 14 revisions to the goal language that have not been adopted yet. I don't think local governments know enough about what those changes will actually mean on the ground. The intent, again, is to codify the urban growth boundary expansion process and do so in a way that allows more flexibility. There is currently rulemaking that is slowly going underway. There currently aren't any rules associated with Goal 14. And part of doing that is to provide some safe harbors for local government in looking at being able to go through a UGB expansion process more efficiently. However, putting safe harbors that match up to cities, 240 cities in the state with many different sizes and different applications on the ground is going to be challenging. And there is some concerns that at the end of the day, at the end of the rulemaking process, where we've spent a lot of time contributing a lot of effort, cities per se, that maybe that won't be, the end result of that won't be more flexibility or something that's more efficient.
So is it possible to make a general statement that's true that would go something like, if there was an ability to push rulemaking revisions off a couple of years until Measure 37 had, you know, the bulk of it had worked its way through the process, that that would be supported by local governments?
I think we would very much support not only a moratorium with rulemaking, but potentially all additional legislative bills for several years. Yes.
I think they want certainty, don't they?
Madam Chair, yes, the answer is yes to them.
Thank you. Mr. Slack.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. Let me first state that I'm here in support of the department's budget overall, especially the grants to local government that are contained within the budget. Those deal with not only the state general fund grants, but also the federal dollars that are within the budget. There is a need for the state to provide the matching dollars for those federal funds to come to the state of Oregon, and they are very important to many of the counties, well, to all of the counties along the Oregon coast at this point. And I will say also for the cities that are subject to those grants. Those grants provide for DLCD field staff to assist the local governments in doing the planning work on the coast, as well as they provide assistance in terms of technical assistance projects. I know that a number of counties have used these grants to help them with their geographic information systems, the GIS systems, in terms of mapping various elements that are used in the planning process, like tsunami and coastal kinds of issues and those kinds of things. And then, of course, the grants also support the current planning efforts within those counties. To give you an example, and you heard that Coos County receives approximately $30,000. Lincoln County receives $35,000. And that is a little over a half a planner and a staff of four. So if you look at losing a planner and a staff of four, that's a big hit at this point. And without those dollars, many of the coastal counties that have fairly small staffs at this point will, needless to say, lose some capacity to provide service to their constituents, and especially dealing with current planning kinds of activities. I have gone before the Land Conservation and Development Commission when they were having their budget considerations, and have asked for more money in terms of grants for local governments for a variety of reasons, least of which is looking at counties complying with the administrative rules and some instances statute changes that are done by the legislature. But more often than not, it's changes to administrative rules at this point that we are faced with complying with. Those changes can either be in the form of periodic review, which we are in the process of reshaping, but also in terms of technical assistance at this point, which will be more of the norm in the future at this point. I chair the Grants Advisory Committee that was established by the legislature last session. I think that the Grants Advisory Committee has done some good work this past year working with the staff in terms of how the general fund grants that are provided by the department and by the legislature can be more effectively used and can be transmitted to the local governments in a more timely manner so that you have the time to use the money to work towards projects and completion of those projects rather than negotiating on the grants and all those kinds of things. The Grants Advisory Committee currently looks at general fund grants, but I would just, since the committee's had some discussion about coastal grants, would just offer that certainly if the legislature or the committee felt that we should broaden our area of interest, that we would be happy to take a look and provide, you know, some comments and recommendations with regard to the federal grants that are available on the coast. In terms of the rulemaking that's going on now, and I mentioned that we may be changing our focus from periodic review to technical assistance, it was the norm for when administrative rules were in process and came down, it was the request that local governments comply with those changes in administrative rules at the next periodic review. And, of course, that's when those dollars came into effect for periodic review. We seem to be interested now in scaling back periodic review. So what we're seeing in terms of draft rules is a time-specific when you need to comply. So it's not periodic review. It's in a year. It's in 12 months or 18 months that counties must be in compliance. We will be applying or utilizing technical assistance grants in order to do the work that is required by those administrative rules should they be adopted rather than periodic review. And I just want to demonstrate to you the difference with those two and how they might be used.
Art, could you share with the committee why it is that you're being asked to move to that different posture in terms of review instead of periodic review, having to do it on a it sounds like a more frequent circumstance. What does that mean? It cost you more money? What's the reasoning behind it?
Chair Morgan, Representative Croft, I think the reason behind it is right now we're looking at scaling back periodic review so that not as many jurisdictions will have to go through that process in the future. And in doing that, then when we look at requirements, those requirements need to be done at least in some, if it's not periodic review, some kind of time frame. And so that's where where I think the department is looking at the rule becoming effect, and then within 12 months or 18 months, counties or cities will have to comply with that rule. It gives us a time frame to do the work, and it does get to everybody rather than just those counties, let's say, that are under periodic review, depending upon the body of work that needs to be done at this point.
So Madam Chair, one quick follow-up. Does moving to a moving away from a posture of periodic review, does that ultimately cost all counties more money, or will it cost them less in money and staff time and effort to move away from the time intensive nature of periodic review?
Chair Morgan, Representative Croft, there is some economies of scale in doing things as part of periodic review that you may lose by doing this piece, and this piece based on a schedule. The overall body of work, I don't think will measurably be affected by that, but there will be some economies of scale in terms of notice and maybe some work that might be pulled together that you could do all at one time rather than do at different periods of time at this point. But I don't think it'll be substantial in terms of the costs.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, let me just the comment was made about Goal 9, and that's an example of where we're looking at, or at least the department and the rule right now is looking for dealing with economic development of local governments complying within a time-specific manner. So in order to do that, then the dollars need to be available in terms of the technical assistance grants to allow, from a budgetary standpoint, the local governments to meet those time frames at this point. Periodic review, it kind of spread it out over a longer period of time. And with technical assistance in a time frame, then everybody is going to be looking for some technical assistance within a much shorter period of time. So from a budgetary standpoint to the state and looking at the grant pool of dollars, it does have a significant impact. Let me just, in closing, Madam Chair, share with you Measure 37. Needless to say, the bulk of the claims that are being filed around the state are with counties as a result of counties complying with state statute and administrative rules. It is my estimate that the counties at this point, and we don't have a fixed number, but somewhere between 700 and 800 claims that are filed statewide at the county level.
Do you have any data, Mr. Schlack, about how many of the claims that have been filed at the county level have also been filed at the state level?
Madam Chair, we can get that as at least an example, but I believe listening to Director Shutterly the other day, he estimated somewhere between 300 and 350. The bulk of those are claims that are filed in counties. So we've got at least a little bit of a disconnect between the claims that are filed with the counties and those that have been filed with the state, although I will mention that counties are encouraging people who are filing claims to also file those with the state of Oregon because of the dual responsibility at this point. So it is a big load, and it will, I think, you know, in the remainder of this biennium be a big burden and responsibilities for counties to address those, you know, at least throughout the next biennium until we get through that, the bulge at this point. And I don't know whether the bulge goes away, but I'd like to think it does at some point in time.
Does anyone have the tally of claims that if they've been filed at the state level and the county level and they're essentially the same claim, only counting those as one claim, how many there have been filed across the state at this point?
Madam Chair, as I indicated, right now, my estimate at the county level is 700 to 800 claims. I don't know about the cities at this point. But each day and each time there is an article in the newspaper or something at this point, you can see a few more people coming to the courthouse to file a claim at this point. Okay. So it's a running
time. So the answer is no.
The answer is no. Sorry about that.
Thank you. Do you have more to add?
No, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll call forward at this time Mr. Mark Jones, and I apologize for not calling you first because you've logged in as being more than 100 miles away. Welcome.
Madam Chair, I'm Mark Jones, the mayor of Newport, and I'm here today in general support of DLCD budget and especially the grants to local governments. I want to take just a couple minutes of your time today, I will be brief, and tell you about a coastal grant that's helped our community tremendously. About a year ago, Newport approached DLCD about a planning strategy that would not only help us identify what lands we had available in our inventory for our specific zones, but what would help the city plan for its future growth in these zones, as well as identify the needs and challenges the city will face in the first half of this century. From that request, DLCD provided funding for collaborative resources to create Newport's economic development and land use strategy, which is an emphasis on the underdeveloped areas of Newport and specifically South Beach. With the help of our consultants and a 25-member public steering committee, after a year of work, we're about now at the final draft. This has created a lot of public input, and we still have more to go. But the buy-in is important, not only because our landowners involved in this study and in the expansion of our UGB area and some parts of South Beach have bought into it, as well as DLCD in the beginning of the process rather than going back and forth through contentious discussions at a later date. So the community is very happy with this program. It has been very effective for our community, and we believe that it will have a long-lasting impact by having the opportunity to work with DLCD. Our community and our planners, we've been able to identify potential problems early and address those early on so that we do indeed prevent a lot of issues related to Measure 37 and other types in the long term. So that's all I have to say today, and I thank you very much for your time. And I'll take any questions if you have any.
Thank you. Questions or comments?
Thank you very much.
I appreciate you making the drive.
I'm sorry.
We're getting the message from the director that the department is going to be changing from more of a regulatory to a technical assistance type thing. Are you seeing any differences from that viewpoint?
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, Newport has experienced that exactly. A couple of years ago, I was very critical of DLCD, and every time we attempted to make changes in the coastal areas, we had nothing but roadblocks. With the new director and his staff, they have been taking a very proactive approach to technical assistance, addressing issues early in the process, and reducing the term of the process. So we've seen very significant results from that. And as Art and Linda mentioned earlier, we're looking for long-term reduction in that the time it takes for periodic review and other those other processes. And this is, I think, the first step in that direction. It's been very effective for us.
Confirm that if that was really the case.
Thank you.
Call Burton Weiss.
Thank you.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, I'm Burton Wiest with Western Advocates. I'm here, first, if I may, on behalf of one of our clients, U.S. Borax Corporation. By way of brief background, Representative Krieger knows all about this, but I bore him to death. But anyway, by way of background, U.S. Borax purchased about a mile and a half of the Oregon coastline just north of Brookings in 1890, and before there was a Brookings, and in the 1980s determined to develop it. They donated a mile and a half of coastland to the state of Oregon, and that became the basis of Samuel Boardman State Park. They still retain about 1,000 acres, 550 of which they have been attempting to develop since 1988, and our company was hired in 1991 and have been involved in this all these years. In the process, we've done everything conceivably possible that you have to do in the Oregon land use system, everything from zone changes to annexation requests to master planning. I don't think there's a periodic review. I don't think there's a land use process we haven't gone through in the last 15 years. Periodic review was discussed by the earlier folks, and I'd just like to add that the majority of that 15 years was spent in the periodic review process. We have enjoyed community support, state support, every state agency's support all these years, yet the periodic review process was one of those things that just kept us tied up. It never seemed to end. In fact, I think Brookings has a record. I think it's, Lane can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's 18 years or something in the periodic review process. I'm one who...
Extensive discussions in this committee in the last session about the period of time that jurisdictions were spending in the process. The
original people are all dead.
Yeah. Well, I'm still feeling pretty good. Madam Chair, Representative Krieger is correct. I'm sorry. Senator Bates is going to check me out here.
Yeah, I'm a little worried now.
Yeah, that's right.
The process is a death penalty. Is that what it's?
Yeah, that's it. I do want to say, and this is the discussion about periodic review and the change and what it does to local governments. I do want to say, however, it's all positive. I also serve on this advisory committee that has worked on periodic review, and I've just got to tell you, even though it's going to mean more work for local governments in some cases or more definitive guidelines, it was a problem that had to be fixed. I mean, it just had to change. And with Lane Shetterly and the department, they made a solid commitment to do it, and we really see the end at the light of the tunnel here. I think the recommendations of the work group, there's a bill, of course, that you know about. It'll be heard soon, hopefully, that implements the discussions of the work group, and we'll be making some significant changes. So, yes, they're going to cause some dislocations. Local government's going to have to deal with them. But if ever there was anything that needed changed in the Oregon land use process, it was periodic review, and we can attest to that. The other thing on behalf of Borax is I'd like to say how important the coastal portion of the coastal program that goes to the local field reps. We began a process over 2.5 years ago when we got down to the point where we could actually apply for something, of having quarterly meetings with the state agencies as well as the local government in Brookings. They've been well attended by all the state agencies, ODOT, Fish and Wildlife, and everyone, and LCDC's field staff has also attended these meetings. They've helped us, and I would tell you that we wouldn't be as far along as we are right now if it wasn't for the support of the local field staff answering questions for the local jurisdictions. And so when you look at the budget, I can only urge you to make that a very high priority. I think I am old enough to remember when the field staff was first started, there was concern that they would be the long arm of the law and that they would be out there causing trouble. And in some cases, that did happen in the past. But I don't think that's the case now. I think universally the field staff see their job as there to help and assist, and not to enforce laws, but to assist local government and people like U.S. Borax to get through the process. So I certainly commend that to you. The other thing, if I may change my hat, Madam Chair, we also represent the Special Districts Association of Oregon, and in that capacity we sit on all the committees that Art and Linda sit on and participate in the process. I support Art and Linda's testimony. However, I would note for the committee than almost all Goal 11, Goal 14, Goal 9, periodic review, the grant program. All of these issues were things that began before Measure 37. They were processes that started it, and so they are now being wrapped up, and I think clearly the staff has a desire to get these over with and done so that they can get them out of local government's hair. As Art and Linda said, we strongly support the local government grants portion of all of this. It makes it happen. And we also are very appreciative of the new leadership at DLCD. And you asked the question, or I forget who asked, someone asked the question about, do we sense a change in the attitude of the agency? I would love to give Lane all the credit, but really the change has been happening over the last 3 or 4 years. And with Lane becoming director, I think the change has become policy, not just a temporary position of the agency. It's become policy. And we certainly commend to you the department's budget on behalf of special districts. Thank you.
Questions or comments for Mr. Reese? Thank you very much. Call forward Randy Tucker from Metro.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Before I testify and even introduce myself, I want to do a favor for a gentleman out here behind me who neglected to sign up and would like to get on the list, and that would be Bill Campbell, the Community Development Director for the Land of Cheese, Trees, and Ocean Breeze, otherwise known as Tillamook County. So, for the record, my name is Randy Tucker. I'm the Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro, the regional government of the Portland metropolitan area. And I will be much less substantive and hopefully shorter as well than my predecessors, but mainly testifying in the spirit of a Me Too approach to what they've been saying about the grants program at DLCD. And in terms of in the case of the metro area, there are a couple of needs that we have in terms of planning funding. Basically, in dealing with the growth of the region and areas that have been recently brought into the urban growth boundary, as well as areas that may be brought into the future to deal with the population growth that we're helping, that we're charged with managing at Metro and that we work with our local government partners to address. Over the last 2.5 years, I guess, the Metro Council has brought over 20,000 acres, or approximately 20,000 acres of land into the urban growth boundary. A lot of that was for residential use, some of it for industrial use. Some of the residential areas present some sort of thorny planning challenges to get them integrated into the region, and if communities in the region can compete for an adequate and healthy pool of grant money, that would be very beneficial. Also, in the future, we can envision trying to compete for some funds to help with concept planning for areas that we expect to come into the boundary in the future. Probably one of the areas that we might mention would be the Stafford Basin area that has a lot of very complicated planning issues and many different constituencies that care about it: Tualatin, Lake Oswego, West Lynn, Clackamas County Metro. And in order to try to look ahead at how to address those problems, we'd like to just be able to support a healthy grants budget that we might be able to apply for, we meaning jurisdictions in the region. So that's all I had to say.
Questions or comments for Mr. Tucker? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Call forward Ralph Groener.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name for the record is Ralph Groener, representing the employees of DLCDC. Ask me. Just a comment, I talked to my staff, so really I'm speaking for them. DLCD is presenting the statistics and has regarding our workloads, and they will discuss with you the liabilities that Oregon will face and have if either of the above are not met, and we're talking traditional land use duties as well as correctly and quickly processing Measure 37 claims under the law. My members care about meeting the agency mission. Presently, they are being, however, you will only hear this from the union, overwhelmed by Measure 37 claims. That's their quote. By the way, I do want to say something up front. I think it's interesting. We have Lane because they love him. But we sent three legislators out of here, Max, Lane, and John, all three are the most popular department heads we've ever had. So any of you want to be department heads, continue doing it, because we've never had this response before. Prior to the passage of Measure 37, critical decisions with economic development impact were being made timely, but lack of resources were making it difficult to properly document and report those decisions. Demands on agency staff were nearing the breaking point for many of them, but timely, accurate results were being achieved for municipalities and developers working on economic development. Then Measure 37 passed, and I'll skip all of that and go over to my budget, where it's, you already have read this statement. At this point, all planners who are not financed with a dedicated revenue source have been assigned Measure 37 claims. We need 9 positions that the agency has requested. I would say that there are 2 fronts, economic development, which brings dollars in, income tax dollars into the state, as well as property tax to the local government. But also, if we are to meet Measure 37, we need adequate staffing. I'm not complaining. They all love the department. They love what you're doing. But I'm being realistic based on what our staff is telling me, and I'm speaking in their behalf. So we would appreciate your funding those positions if you can find the money somewhere in this budget. Thank you.
Really?
Questions or comments? No? Call forward Doug Riggs. Afternoon.
Madam Chair, for the record, Doug Riggs, here on behalf of the Central Oregon Cities Organization, which includes Redmond, Sisters, Madras, Bend, Mobbin, Culver, Metolius, and Prineville. As you all know, we're strong supporters of revising Oregon's outdated and flexible land use planning process. This is particularly important for our fast-growing areas of Central Oregon, rural areas and areas east of the mountains. Oftentimes we run into problems with prime farmland when the land is neither prime nor farmland, really, in Central Oregon. And so having a flexible process is something that we've always been strong supporters of. I got a kick out of Burton's comment about the 18 years. I thought that Prineville's periodic review process of 10 years, which just concluded last year, was a long time, but I guess we don't hold a candle to 18, so that is a long process. I think what we're looking for in Central Oregon is expeditious action on the huge number of land use issues that we are faced with every single year in my communities. UGB expansions, urban reserve designations, waivers of one form or another. And all that takes staff time. It's not something that you can just wave a magic wand and it goes away. It takes time. It takes planning staff time on our behalf, and it takes planning staff time on the DLCD's behalf. Ensuring that we have a departmental staff that has a field staff and a number of field staff that are able to collaboratively work with us to dot all the I's and cross all the T's is essential to creating economic development and job creation in the state. And as a result, we strongly support DLCD's budget request. I do want to note that we have seen an improved relationship at the field level with the department and also with the GERT team, which used to be the Community Solutions team. But we've had very good response in working with our local DLCD and GERT people on a variety of projects, and we very much appreciate that. Finally, I did want to make a comment about the rules process. I'm not a big fan of new rules, and I'm certainly not a big fan of unnecessary processes. But what the department seems to be doing in the Goal 9 and Goal 14 rulemaking processes is trying to bring more flexibility into what is currently not a very flexible process. So to the extent that we can enact policy changes through the rulemaking process that speed up the long-term process, we're all for it. And I would hate to see us put any of that on hold. I would argue that we can ill afford to bypass the opportunity to speed up the process. And although I do not think that Goal 14 and Goal 9 processes go as far as I would like to see them go, I think they're a step in the right direction. So I would hope that the committee would give the resources necessary to finish out those processes so hopefully we can speed up the overall process. I guess my last point is that the bottom line is that no matter how we feel about our land use planning laws and statutes, they're the statutes that we have on the books right now. And they are time-consuming and expensive and burdensome. And unless the department has the resources and the personnel necessary to implement those, we're stuck in a rut, and we will not see progress take place. So for that reason, we're here today in support of the DLC budget request. Thank you.
Senator Bates.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Doug, just in my mind, you know, it's the periodic review process is dependent on cooperation, it's dependent on existing laws. But with Ballot Measure 37 just hitting us, it seems to me very difficult to do any kind of a periodic review at this point until we know the effects of Ballot Measure 37. I mean, how can you go forward with a periodic review when we're just working our way through 37? Everything you might do might be thrown out by a court or by a finding or by a civil case or by someone saying, I've been reviewed, you know, I've been released from the periodic review because I'm about Measure 37 claim that was upheld, and forget the periodic review. For me, I'm going on and doing this. I mean, do you see a conflict there? How can you go forward with the periodic reviews?
Chairman Morgan, Senator Bates, I guess I'm talking less about the periodic review rulemaking process than I'm talking about the other elements of the goals and the implementation of the day-to-day activities that we're all forced to comply with. And understanding that Measure 37 will probably have an impact on everything that we do as a city, as a county, as a state government, I would hate to put off changes to the process that are in that will continue to be used over the next 2 or 3 or 4 year period, waiting for some magical solution or resolution to Measure 37 at some point down the road. The same argument has been used with annexation. We've heard members say we must stop all annexation for a 2 year period of time, and don't worry, 2 years isn't a very long period of time. Well, going back to Prineville, at the conclusion of their 10-year periodic review process, brought in about 1,187 acres into their UGB for residential development for the most part. Within 5 months, that whole amount of property was sold. All of it will be developed within 3 to 5 years. There goes their 20-year supply of residential property in 3 to 5 years. And so a 2-year, you know, holding pattern on annexation, the right ability to annex property, a 2-year delay on any new changes to streamline the rules. In my fast-growing communities, Redmond is now over 20,000 people. Prineville is going to be over 11,000 people. 2 years is a long time. And so I guess my point is, to the extent that we can continue working on processes that speed up the process and make the process more flexible, I would urge the committee to be supportive of those efforts.
Senator Nelson?
Ground up all those lava rocks so you can actually grow something on them.
That's a challenge. I think that's going to take another 100 years of R&D, Senator Nelson.
Further comments or questions? Thank you. Call Rich Angstrom.
Yeah, somebody can ground up rocks.
It's the future of lava rocks.
Good afternoon. My name is Rich Angstrom. I'm the president of the Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers Association. I'm here not to testify, to testify not in support of the budget in one particular area that I think is important that's been neglected, and that's the aggregate planner position that I fought the last, since about 8 years now, to try to maintain that position in the budget. The position, just to kind of background folks, is to assist counties in applying the aggregate rules around the state to make sure there's compliance with the rules. And the industry has supported that and found it to be a very important function for this position. The position also assists not only ODOT but the private sector in applying a very complicated set of rules to the for aggregate. And during the interim, another thing that the position did, I think that's of importance, is worked on the rulemaking that came out of last session. After this legislature was not successful, our last legislature was not successful in getting the aggregate rule taken care of, the aggregate issue taken care of on the Senate side. DLCD picked it up, and this particular position was in charge of kind of marshaling the resolution to that. And in fact, it was a fairly successful process, at least from the industry's perspective. I'm sure there's others out there that probably don't feel that way. But what we have found is that right now we're engaged in a mediation process that the governor himself set up, and front and center in that is the aggregate position in the Department of Land Conservation and Development. It's been have the blessing of not only Lane but many of the agency heads to support that mediation process with the farm community, and we're all sitting down trying to find a resolution to this long-term conflict. This position is pretty important because it all is around land use and trying to resolve that conflict. You know, there's a lot of things that are going on out there that there's a need that's occurring on the local level. And as I was kind of preparing for this testimony, I learned about this from Lane last week, that it was not in the governor's budget. That same day, I also found out that Clackamas County came out with a decision on an aggregate case. Actually, there's two things in a row that happened. One is there was a Measure 37 case, and they decided that aggregate, the way they were going to deal with Measure 37 in aggregate is to call us a common nuisance and get around the 37 claim by calling our industry a common nuisance. This is the kind of thing that the aggregate position could help in working with Clackamas County to say maybe that's not the way to go. There might be a different approach. And the other thing is that on another case where the commission actually decided against an aggregate operator, there was an application, and the county found the order has not come out yet, but the county found orally that the operator had complied with would have meet DEQ's stormwater runoff numbers, but the county decided that any turbidity coming out of the stormwater was too much and denied the application, which is not the way the rule is supposed to work. The rule is supposed to work is when we meet the state standards that we're protected. And many, many times in my history here and prior to my history here, the department has stepped in on those kinds of things when there's just gross deviation of how the law is supposed to work and stepped in and had the county correct the problem in their decisions. The biggest concern is the aggregate position is not in the governor's budget, and it kind of ties the hands of DLCD. I understand in some part that it may be falling in importance with the department. Otherwise, they would be supporting it more heavily with the governor's budget. But I'm really, from the industry side, I'm really confused about how the governor puts together a whole mediation process, puts DLCD in the middle of it, and then doesn't support the aggregate position. So from that side of it, the industry is not support of the budget that's before you. It should include that position. It's been important to the industry. It's been important to ODOT. It's been important to local governments, and it's a position that needs to be maintained. So with that said, I'm open for questions, and I know I kind of shot through that pretty quickly, but the industry's concerned about this.
I think we're actually having a little sidebar conference, so perhaps we'll take this issue up.
Unfortunately, I asked for it. Is Jill Fund money?
What we'll do then is, if you're concluded with your testimony and no one has any questions, wait a minute here. Okay. Have you got any clarification around that?
Madam Chair, I think Mr. Engstrom remarked that there's no position in the budget for the aggregate position. I was just checking with the department. In fact, in the governor's recommended budget for 0507, there is a 0.58 FTE. It was reduced due to some lost funding from ODOT, and the remaining FTE is supported with general fund, but there is a piece of a position in the GRB for the aggregate.
Do we have any information about why ODOT withdrew their support?
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I don't have any specific information other than I assume they looked at their budget and decided that it was not a priority for them, and decided not to pass the funding along to DLCD, and Christina, who I believe is the budget person for ODOT, is nodding her head. So
could you come forward and if you have any information to supply us on that?
Part of it.
Sit by me. Yeah. I don't bite.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Christina Shearwitz, Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management. There were no specific discussions on the part of ODOT as to why. I had no specific discussions with them. We were notified that the funding would not be forthcoming, and therefore the adjustment was made in Department of Land Conservation and Development's budget to reflect the reduced funding level. We can certainly investigate as to the reasoning beyond that, and I can carry that message to ODOT if you wish.
Ms. McGlashan, if you could work with her, I think that it would be valuable information for us to have to talk with ODOT about why they're declining to fund this and see what we can do to move those discussions forward.
I'm sure I agree. I mean, it seems with the incredibly amount of increase in construction, highway construction going on, the need for aggregate, which is going to go straight up, from the discussion we've already had in the committee, that I don't quite understand why this was cut.
Well, a great many of the rock pits that are caught in the balance here are ODOT pits, too. They're.
Are you saying ODOT's the pits?
Well, sir.
Madam Chair, if I may, this position also was previously funded by the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries at one time. That funding was discontinued in the 2001-03 biennium. And so this has been operating at a less than an FTE position for at least one biennium.
Well, let's continue to look into this and kind of see if we can move this issue along. Thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Call forward Bill Campbell. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Bill Campbell, Community Development Director, Tillamook County. I want to give you some brief examples today of the coastal management program at work. When I arrived at work this morning, I received three photographs from our emergency services manager. Over the weekend, a fourplex property in Neatarts lost 25 feet of frontal property on Neatarts Bay, probably due to ground saturation from recent rains. It just rotated and collapsed into the bay. That fracture is extending about 150 feet north and about 125 feet to the south. Before I left, I turned it over to our coastal resource planner to contact Oregon Parks and Recreation and DLCD for coordination of emergency permits to address that particular situation. We do a development permit in concert with Oregon Parks and Recreation on those kinds of emergencies, and that addresses the immediate need for revetment protection of properties along the Oregon coast. Typically, we process some 20 to 22 applications for development permits a year. From January to the present this year, we have 41 development permit requests. This is the first emergency request this winter. It's been a mild winter, and the rest of them deal with riparian issues, estuarine issues, coastal shoreland issues, or beach and dune issues, all having to do with development predominantly within the 12 unincorporated communities, rural communities in Tillamook County. We process geohazard permits given steep topography, landslide-prone topography, and that's how we use that 50% funded position that Mr. Schlack spoke about through the Coastal Resource Program. That provides us with critical capacity assistance. And we, like the other counties, have four staff planners, including myself. Other grants that we compete for, and we've been very successful, is with GIS, Technical Assistance Grants, through the Coastal Resource Program. With that, we've been able to develop geographical information systems for all 7 incorporated cities and all 12 rural unincorporated areas and communities in the county. We established the boundaries, both urban growth boundaries and city limits in the case of incorporated cities, the comprehensive plan designation, zoning, and that's all based upon cadastrally based survey controlled tax parcelization. Without that funding assistance, we would not have been able to get to a point where we are on the verge of implementing a geographical information system throughout all of Tillamook County. So that kind of assistance in terms of grant funding is very important, not only to the county effort and coordinating with our small cities, because Tillamook has a population, they're just right at the cusp of 5,000. The rest of them are very small cities and have limited contractual obligations in terms of staffing for land use planning. So we provide a great deal of coordination with them. Beach protection, emergency measures. There's a lot of other features in the coastal program that, quite frankly, we could not live without. Coordination with federal agencies. Mr. Angstrom spoke to the mediated agreement. We have a mediated agreement in Tillamook County that essentially has stopped all in-stream aggregate mining. That places an emphasis on upstream aggregate resources. Between now and probably the fall of the year, we will have three applications for a determination of significance on aggregate sites within Tillamook County. One is just outside the city of Garibaldi. That will involve coastal shorelands, a determination of coastal consistency with both federal and state agencies. That kind of coordination is absolutely of vital importance in terms of the economy of our coastal area, as well as maintaining appropriate protections and conservation measures with regard to the pristine quality of our bays, harbors, and estuaries. One example that is the most telling is approximately for the past several years, the highest priority in Tillamook County has been the interim revetment of the North Jetty at Tillamook Bay. It was in serious danger of breaching. The Port of Garibaldi and the county were able to get earmarked funds for that interim revetment at a cost of about $246,000. Federal agencies decided that they did not and were not subject to local permits or state permits. They came to the county in June of last year saying, you know, we erred, we do have to have a permit, and would you apply on our behalf? We had started that dialogue with the federal agencies back in February of 2003, but it wasn't until June of 2004 that they acknowledged that a state permit was necessary. We paid the application fee. We took it through the process. And but for the coordination of the Department of Land Conservation and Development, Coastal Program, the Oregon Parks and Recreation, DEQ, that permit would not have been issued. That one-time earmark funds would have been lost at the end of the federal fiscal year. And we would have sat in a position of imminent breach of the North Jetty. As it is, it's been repaired. It's an interim repair. We're still looking for additional federal dollars to repair and restore the rest of the jetties. But I think that speaks to the inherent value of the coordination that we receive through the coastal program with the state of Oregon. It's an excellent program. It's very vital to coastal economies and to the well-being of the coast.
Questions, comments? Thank you very much. I have no one else signed up. Mr. Kafouri, I was wondering why you were sitting there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the courtesy in allowing me to testify, even though I got here after the sign-up sheet has already gone. Stephen Kafouri, representing the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association. We represent over 900 professional planners and citizen members of planning commissions. I'll be very brief. We support the budget that's been presented to you. We're facing enormous pressures, especially in the metropolitan areas, and I think we've got to put Fineville and Bend and some of these other places in the area of metropolitan areas now with the growth that they're receiving in order to do the management of their growth so that the facilities, public facilities such as streets and sewers are matched with houses and supermarkets. Planning needs to happen, and that's what we do. We represent people who are on the developer side, and we represent people who are employees of government, and both sides agree that adequate funding needs to happen if we're going to be developing the state of Oregon. We'd like to just add one quick note, and that is the funding for the geographic information system. It's the state. I guess that's one of the new budget requests that they're asking for this time. And I've been sitting on one of the committees that you've heard about, the task forces with the goals. And it's very difficult to try and make judgments about how we should be developing rural areas, what kinds of uses should be allowed in rural areas in terms of commercial and industrial, if you don't know what's out there zoned. If you'd say, yeah, would this allow, this kind of use should be allowed, But you know that's going to have a little tiny impact or a huge impact. You don't know where those impacts are going to be because you don't know where those areas are around the state. The more that we can have information and be making planning based on information rather than planning based on anecdote, the better our future is going to be in the state. And this budget helps us get there. I have some
questions or comments. Thank you very much. I'll call Peggy Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Peggy Lynch. I just completed my second term as the chair of the State Citizen Involvement Advisory Committee for LCDC. And so I've had an opportunity to sit back and watch the department relatively up close since Dick Benner was department head. So I've had an opportunity to see a number of changes in the department. And a couple of things I do want to say. Certainly, I support the DLCD budget. I want to note some of the things you've not heard about. Some of the things I have heard from this legislature over the past number of years is how important it is for the department to better understand all of Oregon and not just parts of it. And you've heard some of that from Newport and Tillamook, for instance, in the central Oregon cities today. So LCDC has taken upon itself to do a great deal of travel and try to hold its meetings around the state so that local citizens have an opportunity to engage in the process, share their issues, show what they do in their various parts of the state and how the land program connects with their lives. So I'm supportive that we continue the money to be able to have LCDC do that. Second step is the director certainly has been out and visited around the state. We need to make sure there are enough funds for him to continue to do that because it is that better understanding of what's happening around the state that will make it a better Oregon land use program and not a Willamette Valley program. But in order to do that, that means that there also needs to be somebody back in the House in Salem making sure that that jobs get done and that workloads are properly allocated. So as you're looking at the budget and you're seeing the staff people and deputy director, et cetera, those kinds of issues, I believe, relate to that, the fact that you can't have somebody on the road as much as Director Shetterly is and have people back home also being monitored appropriately and doing the allocation of work as it comes in because it comes in daily. I also want to make a comment regarding communications. That is an area that I believe is at the cut list, or the beginning cut list, and how important it is that there be communications staff at the department. Having been a member of the CIAC and knowing that the local advisories committee is going to be up and running, both of those committees are legislatively directed committees. They have state statute responsibilities, but they do need to have some minimum staffing in order to be able to be functional and to do the chores that you as the legislature have asked them to do. So, and it's also important as the director and the commission travel around, one of the benefits that I see is not just that they have an opportunity to testify and share their stories, but it also provides an openness about the program because local media cover that event. And all of a sudden they learn there is a program, there is a place to go to, these are the people that they talk to if they have issues. And you can't do that unless you have some sort of a staff person who's helping to coordinate that sort of media opportunity. I know in Northeast Oregon, in Ontario, there is no Oregon TV media anymore. So it is the local paper in perhaps that is really the only communication to know what's going on in Oregon. They get their TV from Idaho or Washington. Lastly, I do want to support the 30-year review idea and making sure that we do have the money to do that. You've talked a number of times about Measure 37 today. And it's important that we have the conversation with Oregonians about both sides of that issue, and I'm sure you're beginning to hear it from your constituents, those who are anxious to move forward with Measure 37 claims, and those who are concerned that they purchased their property with an expectation that didn't include that Measure 37 claim. So there are multiple sides that need to be heard out there, and this is an opportunity for those that conversation to happen, to say, what's right with Oregon's land use program and what should be fixed? That's, I think, the bulk of my testimony, but thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that wants to testify? Everyone else looks like they're okay. Good testimony. Appreciate you all taking the time to come. And with that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5518. And we'll be back here tomorrow, colleagues, opening the discussion on the Department of Environmental Quality. And with that, I adjourn the hearing.